Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Welcome to this week's episode of Irate Tireless Minority, which I have entitled Fear, Death, and Taxes. Now, I could talk about a quarterback who decided to use his fame, or not his fame, to use his freedom of speech to diss the nation that has afforded him the opportunity to achieve wealth and success as it's measured in this world beyond the wildest dreams of most people. But why? He has freedom of speech. He can use it. If he doesn't like it here, he certainly has the means to leave. That said, let's move on. In politics, the government is abetting crimes against Americans. What do I mean by that? Well, we have here an article on the Washington Times. The IRS does not tell 1 million taxpayers that illegals stole their Social Security numbers. They've discovered that more than 1 million Americans have had their Social Security numbers stolen by illegal immigrants, but officials never bothered to tell the taxpayers themselves, the agency's inspector general said in a withering new report released Tuesday. And this is from Tuesday, August 30th, yesterday. Investigators first alerted the IRS to the problem 5 years ago, but it's still not fixed. A pilot program meant to test the solution was canceled and fell woefully short anyway, and most of them don't learn that their identities have been stolen and their social security files may be messed up. They're not notified. Why are they not notified? Wouldn't you think that would be the first thing you do when you discover a crime against somebody, is you let, especially if you're a government agency who has discovered a crime against one of the people that you're working with, an American citizen, wouldn't you think that your job is to inform that citizen that a crime has been committed so that they can pursue the legal remedies available to them? Apparently not. It is stunning that the IRS has chosen to aid and abet identity thieves for so long instead of protecting the innocent victims of the theft, said Senator Daniel Coats, an Indiana Republican. The numbers are stolen by illegal immigrants who need to give employers a valid Social Security number in order to get a job. Employers are prohibited from probing too deeply into numbers, even when they suspect fraud. Really? Really? We are prohibiting people from doing their duty as citizens to obey the law and to notify law enforcement when they suspect a crime is being committed? But the IRS learns of the scam when the illegal immigrants file their taxes using a special individual taxpayer identification number, ITIN, the agency doles out chiefly to illegal immigrants as a way of making sure they're paying taxes, even if they're not supposed to be in the U.S. Between 2011 and 2015, the agency flagged nearly 1.1 million returns where someone appeared to have stolen a valid Social Security number. Let me say again, when you can't tell the difference between the bad guys and the good guys, then there's something wrong in your government. When the FBI is, or CIA, or any other government agent, law enforcement agency, is tempting people into committing crimes in order to bust them for committing crimes on the idea that, well, we're not going to catch the good people, you have a problem. When the government says they can confiscate your goods for no reason at all, just because they suspect they might be used in the drug trade, you have a problem. When the government can say, oh, if you file your taxes wrong, we can take everything you own because we suspect you might be involved in the drug trade, you have a problem with your government. And when your government is the one dealing drugs, you have a problem. You see, the reason the government is not supposed to be engaging in this type of behavior is because it's ethically wrong, morally wrong, philosophically wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Yes, according to my moral absolute standard of Christianity, one would hope of most other people's moral absolute standards. If you have one, and if you don't, why not go get one so that you can participate in a conversation? When you are an American citizen or a citizen of any other country, you have a duty. You have responsibilities as a citizen. One of your responsibilities is to work as a partner with law enforcement. And when you see somebody breaking the law, you are required by your duty, by ethics, by morals, and by the law to report it. Apparently, unless you work for the government. Then you can issue ID cards to illegal aliens. You can let illegal aliens vote. You can let illegal aliens steal the identity and use the Social Security numbers illegally of American citizens, and that's perfectly okay. Well, here's a notice for you, government. No, it's not okay. Clean up your act. If you want the people to act in partnership with law enforcement, then law enforcement has to have clean hands. If you want us to act in partnership with the government, then the government has to have clean hands. Do you wonder, Congress, why you have such a low approval rating? It's because you don't have clean hands. And I'm ranting, and that's bad for my voice. But clean it up. Clean up your act. Oh, we also have an article by DennisMichaelLynch.com. The DOJ warns it's illegal not to employ illegals, by A. Griffey on August 30th. Just because migrant workers have expired papers is no reason to fire them, warns the Department of Justice. It's a form of discrimination. Are you serious? Are you serious? The law is the law. The government is supposed to enforce the law. That's one of the main reasons to have a government, is so that they can enforce the law. I suggest they get off their butts and do it. And figure this out. Look at this. Okay, the IRS knows who the illegals are and where they work. Oh, we can't possibly find all those illegal aliens to deport them. Yes, we can. The IRS knows where they are. The law applies to you, government. Oh, and Mr. Comey, here's a little note for you. Since apparently you can't see how Ms. Clinton's actions rise to the level of requiring an indictment, you need to check out the Wall Street Journal, www.wsj.com. And the title you're looking for is The U.S. Department of Clinton. Latest emails show that State and the Foundation were one seamless entity. Oh, and, you know, here we go. Here we go. Let's see. We've got, I have the applicable quote here somewhere, but computer's not behaving me, from the article. Mrs. Clinton's problem, as we now know from this week's release of emails from Huma Abedin's private Clinton server account, was that there was no divide, none, between public and private. Mrs. Clinton's State Department and her family foundation were one seamless entity, employing the same people, comparing schedules, mixing foundation donors with state supplicants. This is why she maintained a secret server and why she deleted 15,000 emails that should have been turned over to the government. And the second quote from the article? Mostly we learned this week that Mrs. Clinton's foundation issue goes far beyond the appearance of a conflict of interest. This is a straight-up pay-to-play. When Mr. Band sends an email demanding a Hillary meeting with the Crown Prince of Bahrain and notes that he's a good friend of ours, what Mr. Band means is that the Crown Prince had contributed millions to a Clinton Global Initiative scholarship program and therefore has bought FaceTime. It doesn't get more clear-cut, folks. That's on the Wall Street Journal page, Mr. Comey. You think you can find some intent there? Although intent isn't required for the law to be enforced that she broke. Still appalled. Still appalled. The rule of law in this nation. Now, we're going to move on to something truly, truly horrendous and egregious. Religion. The religion of pieces. And what we have here is a small article that I came upon on girlsjustwanttohaveguns.com. Hidden Hells of ISIS. Images reveal ISIS's industrial-scale murders. Thousands of bodies. And they are linked to an article in thesun.co.uk. Hidden Hells of ISIS, thousands of bodies found in 72 mass graves as images reveal the shocking scale of ISIS's industrial-scale murder. And AP has documented and mapped 72 mass graves, the most comprehensive survey of its type covered out, with many more expected to be uncovered as ISIS's territory shrinks. This is what we have allowed. This is what this government has encouraged and created. There is blood on our hands because of this. And the most egregious thing about this is that if we had given our military, the best military in the world, one word from the Obama administration, well, that and repealing the ridiculous and suicidal rules of engagement put in place by the Obama administration. One word. We could have sent our troops over there and wiped ISIS out. It would have helped if Ms. Clinton and Mr. Obama hadn't been giving them money and arms, political clout, but they did. This blood is on our hands, America. In Syria alone, AP has obtained locations for 17 mass graves, including one with the bodies of hundreds of members of a single tribe all but exterminated when Daesh took over their region. For at least 16 of the Iraqi graves, most in territory too dangerous to excavate, officials dare not even guess the number of dead. In others, estimates are based on memories of traumatized survivors, Daesh propaganda, and what can be gleaned from a cursory look at the earth. Still, even the known victims buried are believed to total more than 15,000. 15,000. Aerial photos also offer the clearest look yet at massacre sites such as the one at Badoush prison in Mosul, northern Iraq, that left 600 male inmates dead. What? Only male inmates? Well, you know, they have other uses for the women. One prisoner who only survived by playing dead revealed how ISIS butchers forced hundreds to kneel on the edge of a ravine and started shooting with a machine gun. After the firing stopped, one fanatic said, "We're going to eat well tonight." And they've got pictures of the mass graves and stuff, and tales of people driving by the graves of relatives. "We want to take them out of here. There are only bones left." But they said, "No, they have to stay there. A committee will come and exhume them later," said Kasim, standing at the edge of the flimsy fence surrounding one site where his two sons are buried. "It has been 2 years, but nobody comes." Of the 72 mass graves documented by the AP, the smallest contains 3 bodies. The largest is believed to hold thousands, but no one knows for sure. There are graves still out of reach. "We see clear evidence of the intent to destroy the Yazidi people," said Naomi Kikoler, who recently visited the region for the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. But proving what United Nations officials and others have described as an ongoing genocide and prosecuting those behind it will be complicated as the graves deteriorate. ISIS made no attempt, or Daesh made no attempt, to hide its atrocities. In fact, it boasted of them. And on the girls just want to have gun sites, one of the first commenters, Infidel Crusader, said this is how the Nazis got their pogrom against the Jews started. Small groups of soldiers rounding up as many of the targeted people as possible, executing them, and then disposing of the bodies in mass graves. For those too young to know what I'm talking about, look up the Einsatzgruppen. Probably mispronounced that. The magnitude of the savagery of ISIS probably won't be known with certainty for decades. And if you look up the Einsatzgruppen, it's German for task forces, deployment groups. And it says on Wikipedia, they're SS paramilitary death squads of Nazi Germany that were responsible for mass killings. And if you're out there wondering how in the world can human beings do this to one another? A lot of them are on drugs. There's a certain drug that makes them feel like they are the king of the world, and they will kill and slaughter without remorse. But maybe some of them are just willing servants of evil. Oh, wait, they're all Muslims. They are willing servants of evil because that's what Islam is. It's evil. We know what the doctrines of Islam are. We have had time. We have had 9/11. We've had ISIS Daesh out there demonstrating to us. We have Saudi Arabia where women can't drive even because of the rules of Islam. If you are supporting Islam, you are a willing servant of evil. And this country should not be bringing you here. If you are a servant of Islam, you are a willing servant of evil. And if you disagree, then I challenge you personally to look up your own doctrines, examine them, and then if you're truly a decent person, you will do what a decent person would do, and you will leave Islam. Oh, but that's a death sentence. Yes. Yes, it is. Because it's evil. You know, people criticize the United States, and I can see us descending into tyranny step by step by step, especially this election cycle. Death care is spiraling down. It's in its death spiral. It's going to be abolished. It has to be because it can't work. It could never work. It never was intended to work. It was intended to destroy the medical system and the insurance system in order to put the state in charge of your health care, in order to force a single payer because, oh, Obamacare is gone. What will we do? The government must save us. No, it must not. The government must learn, O Congress, to keep their fingers out of our business. And it would help if you stopped trying to play patsy with the evil in the world, because that was the rise of Daesh. Libya, Benghazi, I have been calling my representative since Benghazi, daily, not weekends or holidays, because I am a civilized person. I have been calling since Benghazi daily, demanding impeachment over it. I'd appreciate it if some other people would get on board with that. And yet, we can see the evil that was done to the morale of the country. We can see the evil that's been done to the morale of the military. We can see that our military has been shrunk to unprecedented, well, not unprecedented proportions, but shrunk to a size that could not possibly defend us were there a large attack, except for the benefit of our technology. We have enemies out there, people. And they are coming here, and they are in our government, and they are bringing our enemies in. Refugees. Yeah, oh, we're helping the Syrian refugees. They are not refugees. Most of them are men. Young, healthy men. You want to know about these refugees? They are followers of Islam, a barbaric, evil death cult. Most of them don't want to come here. And you know what the nail in the coffin is for the, oh, we're showing them compassion argument? The nail in the coffin for that is that if we really wanted to help them, it costs 12 times as much to bring one refugee here as it does to help them where they are over on the other side of the pond. So for every one that we bring here, there are 11 that could have been helped over there who won't be helped because we spent the money bringing one of you here. See, that's not compassion. That's not charity. That's not helping anybody. Bringing invaders who do not love this country, who hate this country, who hate all the liberties and freedoms allowed in this country. People who come here and settle. There are interviews with people in Michigan. Somali Muslims relocated to Michigan. Oh, by the caring Lutheran and Catholic charities who get money for resettling them. Who say that they prefer Sharia law, that America is not the best place to be, Islamic countries are. We really need a fund set up to say, you don't like it here? Great. Go home. Go to an Islamic country. And the same for socialists. You want socialism here? You want single-payer health care? Here's some money. Go someplace and live there. Go someplace else. Hello, Tulsa Reeves. Good to see you in the chat. And whoever's hanging on, I don't know that I'll have time to talk to you or to bring you on. Oh, and I had a point I was going to make, and now I have lost it because I checked the chat room. I hate it when I do that. Einsatzgruppen. That's what ISIS is doing. That's what Daesh is doing. They are killing the Yazidis with death squads. And it's our fault. It's our fault for supporting them. Then I brought up, there was, you know, in World War II, not everybody wanted to go to war because they said it's none of our business. It's over in Europe because war is so awful, and war is awful. And I have a quote on there of John Stuart Mill, War is an ugly thing, but not the ugliest of things, the decayed and degraded state of moral and patriotic feeling which thinks that nothing is worth a war is much worse. When a people are used as mere human instruments for firing cannon or thrusting bayonets in the service and for the selfish purposes of a master, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, George Soros, such war degrades a people. A war to protect other human beings against tyrannical injustice. A war to give victory to their own ideas of right and good, and which is their own war, carried on for an honest purpose by their free choice, is often the means of their regeneration. A man who has nothing which he is willing to fight for, nothing which he cares about more than he does about his personal safety, is a miserable creature who has no chance of being free unless made and kept so by the exertions of better men than himself. As long as justice and injustice have not terminated their ever-renewing fight for ascendancy in the affairs of mankind, human beings must be willing, when need is, to do battle for the one against the other. That's the full quote. And I'm going to move on to fear. Churchill said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and I have linked a wonderful post by Douglas V. Gibbs from Tuesday. Are you fearful? He quotes Hobbes, "The passion to be reckoned upon is fear." Looking back into the annals of history, what we recognize is that in order for tyranny to rule, they must use fear to ensure obedience in the state. Without fear, there can be no tyrannical rule. For fear of imprisonment, torture, death, or public ridicule, the populace obeys the orders of the ruling class. Otherwise, they fear they may suffer punishment for disobedience. To determine if something is tyrannical, then, we could simply gauge what the fear factor is. A friend of mine fears putting up a Trump for President sign in his yard because the last one he put up was taken. A woman up the street had hers vandalized. Another gentleman told me that since he put a Hillary for Prison 2016 sticker on his car, the vehicle has been keyed multiple times. Do people who put up pro-Hillary signs or stickers fear the same repercussions? Because of the violence of protesters, are we more fearful to go to a Trump rally or a Clinton rally? You know, those protesters who were paid by George Soros to go and make trouble at the Trump rallies? How about an anti-Islam sign or sticker? And, you know, how about the fear of protesting, of doing any sort of protest within 50 yards of somebody protected by the Secret Service? Thank you, Mr. Obama and Mr. Bush. Free speech in America. Are we fearful to take a stand against Islam? Would you well, if you're fearful now, what are you going to do when it's here? When you have Islamic neighbors imposing Sharia on you, are you going to stand up then? If you won't oppose that when it's easy, are you going to do it when it's hard? Gird your loins, people. Gather up whatever courage you have and stand up. On a college campus, are our students more fearful to speak up about conservatism or liberalism? Which side is more violent against its opposition? Hello, liberals, that's you. How many conservatives keep their mouths shut in college or in Hollywood because of the violent response they will get? If the fear lies in the hands of liberalism and Islam, doesn't that clearly make them tyrannical? Think about it, folks. And call your governor and call your congressman and let them know that you want to stand up against Islam and that you understand the blood on our hands. And you tell them you want our government to stop being the bad guys. You don't get to feed drug dealers to catch drug dealers. The citizens are supposed to help you do that. But if we don't know who the good guys are, how are we supposed to? And with that, we are all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference, and we are all supposed to. And Tulsa, I'm sorry. I just checked the chat room again. She said she's on hold and has an important call, and I told her I wasn't going to be able to get to her. And here we have a few seconds, so I could have. But she'll have to call back next week, and I hope she will. Who are the good guys? Fear, death, and taxes. Oh, and please pray for Nabil Qureshi, diagnosed with a fast-moving type of cancer. He is a convert from Islam to Christianity and a well-known apologist for Christianity. I was notified by David Wood of his diagnosis yesterday. Well, he notified everybody on his feed, and I happened to see it. So prayers for Mr. Qureshi, that he have no fear and that he stand strong in the Lord, as did Job and Daniel. Have a great week.